Welcome to a brand new episode.
Mike Driscoll, The Python Show.
Hello, and welcome to The Python Show. I'm your host, Mike Driscoll, and today I welcome my friend Patrick to the show. Hello, Patrick.
Hi.
So Patrick is the author of a Strawberry GraphQL package, which you can use with Python to interact with GraphQL, I believe. And he also does conference talks and other things in the Python community. So welcome to the show, and why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. My name is Patrick. I created this library called Strawberry GraphQL, which allows you to create GraphQL servers using Python. We'll go into details now, I guess, during this show. On top of that, I guess I'm Swiss-Italian. I grew up mostly in Italy the first 20 years of my life. Then I moved to London. And at the moment, I'm in Slovakia because my girlfriend is doing an internship here. But we should be back in London at some point soon. On top of that, I also help organize PyCon Italia. I'm the chair of the Python Italia Association at the moment, and we organize PyCon Italia every year, pretty much. And I've been helping EuroPython on and off in the last maybe 6 or 7 years. I've been off for 2 years, and then I got back 2 years ago. I was in the board. This year, I'm just helping with the website because I had a bit too many things going on at the same time.
Yeah, that's cool. So I like to ask my guests just a little bit about how they got into programming. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and your journey.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't really have a good memory, I guess, of my early times with programming. I remember that was a lot into like magazines. So I was kind of reading like things like Windows Magazine and Linux Magazine, and that was one for programming. So that kind of got me started with at least getting familiar with these kind of things. And I think also my uncle was doing some website, and it kind of made me wonder if I could do something like that. And then at some point, my parents needed a website, so I tried to implement one. And so I started with doing some HTML, CSS, and I think it was PHP or even just pure HTML, actually. Don't even remember. So that's, you know, I started doing some website, and then I went on IRC. I don't even remember how I found out about IRC, because I grew up in a tiny village. I was the only one kind of into tech, I guess. I got into IRC, and there was quite a bunch of people there passionate about CSS and web development. And there were actually quite a few people passionate about Python. So they invited me to the Python channel, and they basically kind of forced me to try Python. And I pretty much never looked back, actually. It's took me a while to get started with it, but I kind of fell in love at some point and I started using it for everything.
Yeah, I kind of miss IRC. That was a fun time using that.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, now there is Discord, but I feel like, maybe 20 servers. Like, I cannot follow so many servers. It's just...
Yeah. Yeah, I find Discord confusing. Once you get beyond like 3 or 4, it gets really hard to follow everything.
Yeah, there's a bit of a debate. Well, not debate. Like, we're chatting with the people at EuroPython because we use Discord for their conference organization. But sometimes they've been messy. We kind of want to get back to Slack because it's somehow it's easier to manage a lot of information into Slack. And we use Slack for Python Italia as well. And it's been working well. But it's also,
I don't know what it is. I feel like Discord's notifications aren't as obvious when they're just for you as Slack is. Hopefully they'll figure that out.
At what point? Yeah.
So what are some of your favorite Python packages or modules that aren't your own, of course?
More than a package or module, like one thing I really like is PDM. It's more like a tool for Python, and it's a Python package manager. It's similar to Poetry or I guess Pip in a way, but I really like it because it works pretty much for all the things I need to do. So for example, I mean, obviously it manages the virtual end for you, like Poetry. You can install things and it adds them to the pyproject.toml. It also has a log file, like everything. But one of the features I love the most is like the scripts feature. It's similar to, if you're familiar with the package.json, there's a script option that you can put. You can say dev is, for example, if it's Django, Python manager, py run server. And so you just do pdm dev or things like pdm test to run pytest. And it makes your kind of development much faster because you just have to write pdm test. And it's something I really wanted in poetry as well, because I don't have to remember to type all, you know, or everything. And that's quite neat. And it also has an interesting support for environment files. So you can say that all your scripts are going to read a specific environment file. So it populates the environment variable from a.env. So you don't have to use .env. So it's one less dependency, which is quite nice. In terms of maybe like a package, I guess struct log might be one that's
okay.
That's a good one. I don't know. Logging is it's difficult in Python. A struct log makes everything much easier and also easier to see on UI side. Mm. It's more neat as an output. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember looking at that one, but I haven't tried it out yet. So I think I was evaluating struct log. I think there's another one called logbook.
I haven't seen logbook.
Yeah. So there's another one too. I think there's three there for a while. I can't remember the other one. But yeah, they're interesting. They're interesting packages. Speaking of, you called it PDM. Have you tried OV? I think that's from Astral.
Yeah, I haven't tried it yet. I mean, that might if they implement the same feature set as PDM, I'm probably going to migrate to that. But like the main things I need is, virtual IAM support, which they have. Log files, I don't know if they have it already, but I don't think there's
scripts.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I'm all for, you know, make everything as fast as possible. It's a bit of a shame that there is, I mean, this is similar for the typing stuff, but like, you know, there is quite a lot of work being done in different directions. Like there is PPAMP, poetry, PDM, UV, and I'm sure there's other things. I think there's one prefix it might be. But it just, you know, I think we were making fun of JavaScript having so many frameworks, but we kind of went the same direction with packaging at least.
Packaging's been a mess for a while.
but it's cool to see, you know, innovation being done there. Just like it would be cool to kind of recognize more people, I guess. I mean, the person behind PDM is just amazing and always responsive on issues. And yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good that we have multiple competing standards, because I think that'll make every one of them better, and hopefully the one that works the best will, I don't know, take some of the features that the other ones have and just make the whole thing better.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Google and Apple, their phones have a lot of the same features because they kind of copy each other back and forth. So hopefully, we have that same dynamic.
Yeah, for sure. It's, I mean, we're going to benefit from this, I guess. It's just like, you know, there is a bit of catch up we need to do. And I mean, we don't have to follow all of this. We just can wait for a bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's nice to look at the new shiny things and try them.
Yeah. I like kicking the wheels and seeing which one works nice and, you know, which one fits best in my CI system. Anyway, let's get back to Python packages. Why don't you tell me a little bit about Strawberry GraphQL? You know, I don't really know much about GraphQL in the first place. Maybe you could just tell us what that is.
Yeah, for sure. So, GraphQL, I feel like it's a bit niche, especially in the Python world, but it's growing more than in, I guess, the indie space, like, you know, individual developers or smaller companies. It's growing quite a bit in the enterprise world because... Just to kind of understand more, like GraphQL is basically an API technology. It allows you to do things like you would be able to do with REST. But the main difference is instead of working with multiple endpoints, like for example, /user/post and so on, you only have one, which is usually /GraphQL, and then you send a document similar to what a SQL query would be. You basically are telling the server what kind of data you want to fetch, and then the server kind of goes and fetches data from the right places. But one thing I want to clarify is that doesn't mean that you are exposing your old database. GraphQL is a schema, which is usually handcrafted. So you basically write it on your own, and you say, oh, these are the entry points. These are the things that you can fetch from this API. For example, for the example I mentioned before, you would have a field called user, or one field called blog post, one field called all blog posts and things like that. And basically, you can only fetch those kind of data.
And
the reason why it's called GraphQL is because it's pretty much a graph of data. So like things can be connected together. So for example, you can have a user field, which is a user, returns a user type, but the user type can also have a list of blog posts, for example, deleted blog posts or list of comments and so on. So it's kind of everything connected together.
So do you have like multiple QL documents that you can send at the same time, or is it the graph is just kind of representation of the fact that there are different paths it can travel?
Yeah, exactly. The graph is it's a representation of what data you can fetch. Yeah.
Okay. I think I get it. All right. So where does the strawberry GraphQL part come in?
Yeah. So GraphQL is a specification, and it's an open source. It was created by Facebook in 2015, I think. And it was owned by Facebook up until a few years later, but then it's been released as a fully open source. So now it's like community owned. It's actually GraphQL Foundation that owns the development. But as I mentioned, it's a specification, so it's not really an implementation. And Strawberry is basically an implementation of the GraphQL specification in Python. And it uses a syntax similar to data classes to define the types. So you can do class user name colon string, and you're saying that this user has a name of type string, and then you have to use the @strawberry.typedecorator to say this is going to become a GraphQL type using Strawberry. So that's how it works. It's a bit hard to visualize, but it's if you're familiar with data classes, instead of doing the data classes decorator, you do the strawberry.typedecorator. And that pretty much does the same thing that data classes does, but also adds some metadata to tell Strawberry that this is going to be a GraphQL type.
That's cool. So is that compatible with the majority of Python web frameworks? It just kind of plugs in and just works with any of them?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we have done quite a bit of work to implement as many web frameworks as possible into Strawberry itself, because there's other library, they have a separate implementation, but there's quite a few frameworks. I think we have maybe 7 integrations. Being updating all of them in different repos, it's quite difficult. And we have one place where we do everything. And I also spend quite a bit of time to actually reduce the amount of code that's duplicated between all this integration, because at the end of the day, GraphQL is a one endpoint, send some data and receive some data back, plus some other interesting things. But the initial implementation that we had was quite a bit of duplication of code. And I think towards the end of last year, I spent a bit of time to refactor all of that. And now it's much easier to add new integration, also to add new features if needed.
Cool. So which web frameworks do you officially support right now? Do you know?
I can check, but on top of my head is all the ones that support ASCII, because we use Starlet for the ASCII integration. FastAPI, we have a dedicated integration. There's Django, there's Flask. Django supports both sync and async. Flask, we also do sync and async for Flask. There's Qwert, there is Lightstar, and I think the last one is AOHTTP. And Chalice as well. There's quite a few of them. It's...
Nice.
Once you add one, it's easy. It's difficult to say no to the other ones, and it's also not a lot of code.
So. Okay. That's cool. It's not something I'm super familiar with, because I don't do a lot of web programming. So it's fun to learn about how different people program on the web. So which of those web frameworks do you like to use or have tried?
I tried all of them to just try the integration. I'm not familiar with all of them, though, at least not in depth. The one I use the most is Django, because it's the one that kind of kicked off my Python career, because I was doing some script, but then I was into web development, and I went and tried Django. And I guess it provides a lot of things for you. Like the admin is... I mean, maybe right now it's not, doesn't feel that magic, but like 10 years ago, it felt like magic. You would just write a file and then you would create an admin interface
for yeah.
The authentication is a big reason why I use Django as well. And DRM, I never got familiar with SQL Alchemy, but maybe I should at some point. So Django will be the main one. But then FastAPI is also one of my favorite ones. I use that for kind of smaller things when definitely for all my demos is FastAPI because it's easier to set up and it's quite lightweight. And I think it also kind of works well with GraphQL because it's, you know, FastAPI is, it doesn't have to be for APIs, but it's meant to create APIs and GraphQL is also for APIs.
Okay.
And they also both use type-ins, which are quite similar. Yes.
Huh. So Django isn't type hint compatible yet?
Yeah, I mean, so there are third party packages for Django that help makes it easier to do type stuff. So there is Django types and Django stubs, I think.
Okay.
But it's not great yet. So I mean you can use Strawberry, you can use type ins with Django as well, but like if you do StrictBot, you're gonna have a bit of a hard time because there are things that are done in the Django framework that are not easy to define with a type system.
Yeah.
Even just the thing that you are using, like the syntax, you create a model and do ID equals Django integer field, for example. Like it's hard to tell a type checker that that's actually creating a constructor on that type. It's the same issue with data classes, actually. Like, for example, in MyPy, there was a plugin to basically tell MyPy, look, when there is this decorator, there's going to be a constructor on this class or equalizer method or all that kind of things. Now that became a specification, so there is a way to kind of formally define decorators that work similar to data classes because there is data classes, there is Strawberry, there is Pydantic, there is Actors that pretty much do the same thing. And so there is a specification, there is a pep for this that basically tells the type checker like when you see this decorator or maybe this base class, then you're going to have this method, which is quite nice, but still difficult to represent some of the things that, for example, Django does. Even Django by default adds an ID property to the type, but that's pretty much impossible for a type checker to know. Unless you make a plugin.
Yeah, I think I was playing around with MyPy and trying to do some type checking on PyGTK, and PyGTK has a lot of magic under the covers, and it didn't like it very well. So you do a lot of lint, PyLint ignore because it's not very happy with those.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. We for Strawberry, for example, we have quite a bit of tests just for MyPy and also PyWrite, the other one, or the most used one, I guess. We have quite a bit of tests to make sure that we don't break this integration, this plugin, because we rely on type-ins, and if you use type-ins and you get errors, then that's not a great developer experience.
No, it's not. That's cool. I really need to try PyWrite. That's on my to-do list.
Yeah. If you use VS Code, it's kind of bundled in with the Python extension.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, it's quite nice. Yeah, it's fast and works quite well. Sometimes a bit too strict, though.
Can you use PyWrite outside of VS Code, though?
Yeah. There is a language server and also a command line interface.
I think when they first announced it, it was only in VS Code, and that's why I wasn't super interested in it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting because PyWrite is kind of the open source type checker, but there's also PyLance, which is the VS Code extension. It gives a bit more features.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
That might be what I'm getting confused about then.
Yeah, well, it is confusing. I don't know why they've done this kind of split, I guess, of extension plus.
It definitely threw me for a loop. I remember when I first read about it, I'm like, is this installed with the Python plugin? Because I think it was, at least at that time. And I'm like, okay, do I need to install anything else? And it wasn't obvious. So.
Yeah.
Anyway. So have you noticed AI helping you out in any way with all this web framework or type hinting or anything you do with your open source development?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Copilot. I mean, there is also some bias here because I get it for free. They give it for free for like open source people for some reason. I don't know what why I'm specifically getting it, because I know some friends at open source haven't got it. So I don't know if it's like number of stars or other things, but so there's some bias there. But I use it quite often. I really like it for tests. So usually you write one test, so even just with PyTest, you know, def and then test this thing, and then usually infers the right thing. But if he has enough example from your code base, then it usually does the right thing, which is quite nice. And it kind of makes it easier to write tests that are a bit repetitive. But in terms of just general programming, I use it also quite often as well. But sometimes it doesn't do the right thing. And if you don't know that's not doing the right thing, then you're wasting quite a bit of time, especially if you're going fast and it suggests something that looks correct but it's slightly wrong. Then that kind of sometimes makes you waste more time than you actually saved. Overall, it's been nice. It does struggle a bit with new things. Like, for example, I've been using this framework called Astro, which is a JavaScript framework, which is quite nice, but it's quite new and there's not enough training data for it. And sometimes just suggests random things. It doesn't really have the ability to tell, oh, I'm suggesting something that, you know, doesn't kind of work in this case. But yeah, other than that, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I've only used, I think, Copilot for one job, and I noticed it was really good with tests, where it would, especially boilerplate. But yeah, for regular, like if you need to do like greenfield work, it wasn't that great. So
yeah, for sure.
It's interesting to hear other people's experiences.
Yeah, it's also interesting for writing docs. I'm not a good doc writer, and Copilot sometimes helps with just with the writer block. Like it writes something and says, "Oh, I don't like this," and then kind of gives you some ideas to what to write and to make it better.
Interesting.
It's not too bad for that. Yeah, and it's also good for kind of generating random data. Like I'm a developer advocate, at least for the next couple of weeks. And I do demos quite often, and it's quite useful to just, you know, return something and it generates some random data for you, so I don't have to think about random stuff. So.
Huh. That's cool. I remember it creating some good fake users in my Django code when I was writing some tests, and I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about your conference organizing. You mentioned PyCon Italia, probably pronouncing that wrong, and EuroPython. How'd you get into that, and how's that going?
Yeah, I guess it's a similar story for both of them. So, and it all stems with IRC. Like, as I mentioned, when I was starting programming, I joined this Python channel, and after a while, there were some people organizing the second PyCon Italia in Florence, and I was 16 at the time, and like there were other people same age as me, which I didn't know actually they were the same age as me, but they said, oh, we should go to this conference. So we just somehow organized it, and we went to the conference, and we had a great time there. We got the ticket for free. 1 year, we even got the accommodation for free. One of the people that was living in Florence said, oh, you can come sleep with us, and that's fine. And I mean, the organizer team was very nice. Like, you know, just even getting it, free ticket as a student was really cool, and I don't know, it kind of felt like, oh, we should definitely not miss this opportunity. But I think the main thing that kind of struck with me is just how welcoming was the community. As I mentioned, I grew up in a small village, and I had quite different interests than my friends. I mean, I was mostly into tech and programming, but none of them was actually doing any of this. And then I kind of, you know, just going to this conference, I felt more at home. But something I kept thinking over the years is also like there is a big difference of age between the organizers, some of the organizers and also me. And I never kind of felt that the difference was, the difference of age at least was, I don't know, problem. Like they treat me as an equal,
okay.
Which was different from, I guess, my previous experience. Like in, I don't know, like older people than me always wanted to, I don't know, they wanted to be treated with respect.
I understand.
Also they kind of felt like you didn't have enough experience in general, so they was always trying to teach you things. But in this case, they were just, you know, talking with me normally about the things that we like without, you know, any judgment or anything like that. So it was really cool. And yeah, it was probably one of the first time I kind of felt that at home with my people, I guess. And so I pretty much started going every year to a PyCon Italia. So I joined on the second PyCon Italia, and that was in 2007. And I pretty much went to all of them since then. So
cool.
The number on top of my head, but it's maybe 14 of them. And
so how big is that conference nowadays?
Yeah, nowadays it's pretty much 800 people. Well, it could be more, but we have a physical limit in the venue. And
yeah,
I think next year we will change venue. We maybe try to get it bigger, get more people, I guess, there.
Okay.
And EuroPython, I'm pretty much... similar because there was in 2011, instead of doing PyCon Italia, we did EuroPython.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I met people there. And that's how, so, I mean, yeah, that's how I kind of heard about EuroPython as well. And then in 2015, I kind of started helping with the website because it's
okay.
One of my passions, like doing websites. And that's how I got into the organization team. For a few years, then I left for a couple of years because I was getting burned out with too many things of doing. After PyCon, I also went to JungleCon, JungleCon Europe.
Oh, cool.
That was also one interesting conference because, yeah, it's about Django, but Django has a lot of focus on kind of diversity in community, and it was really cool, and it's something that kind of I really liked, and I kind of got to me, and I'm trying to bring to PyCon Italia as well, and also all the people of PyCon Italia have similar feeling, but like JungleCon was kind of really big on having, you know, at least a couple of community keynotes or diversity keynotes, which I think it's really important. Like for me, like I wasn't really aware of any of those topics or like all the discussion that were around that, and I think, you know, having these things in a conference is really good because I don't know, personally, as a young adult, I wasn't really thinking of going to, or even watching a YouTube talks about diversity, about inclusion. It wasn't on my radar. So like having a conference, I would kind of, I don't know, let's say force you to see these talks. I think it's really good because you know, you're there, you're definitely going to watch the keynote. And also the people that they brought, were really good. Were really passionate and really able to bring this topic home. So that was really, really cool to see.
So what parts of the conferences have you been in charge of? Just out of curiosity.
That's a good question. It definitely changed over the years. Like, for example, like EuroPython has usually been mostly the website. And I was also on the board, but the board, the EuroPython, it's I don't know how to describe it. We do calls every 2 weeks and we discuss different things, but it's not like there is some people that are in charge of specific things, but usually we come up as a team, we make decision, I guess, at least for the most of the things. But there's definitely like people like the chair of the EuroPython that kind of has the focus on the more crucial things like signing the contracts, finding the venues. I mean, finding the venues, it's shared, but like, you know, the chair usually is responsible for that. For PyCon Italia, we jump between tasks. At the beginning, again, website, we were using an older code base that was a bit hard to maintain. And we also, you know, as we are developers, we always want to build the next better thing. We tried to basically make it from scratch. We actually, quite happy with how it turned out. Like, there is Marco and Esther, but especially Marco is one of the key people of the work that's been done for the Python Italia website. I mean, the front end, I mean, obviously I'm biased, but it looks really nice. We collaborated with an Italian design studio to get the graphics, but also the back end is really cool. There's a lot of things that have been done there to just make our life easier. And hopefully in future, we're going to do more. So, I mean, I was doing website stuff just to get back to what I was doing. Nowadays, I'm not really, I mean, I'm doing some coordination. I mean, this year I kind of took a step back as in day-to-day stuff because I was getting a bit burned out with work. So that's one of the reasons why I'm quitting soon. And so I wasn't doing much. I was doing some visa stuff. So, you know, signing the visas, for example. And one thing that's very annoying to do is some electronic invoice that we have in Italy. That's something we implemented a script a couple of years ago. We tried to make it better this year. But there's some bugs, and I've been working on that quite a bit, which is, not fun work, but it's something that we need to do. And there's been some work also to, the one thing that we want to do is to kind of make the Python communities grow in Italy. This is also a common topic with EuroPython. Like, EuroPython organizes EuroPython, the conference. But also has a goal of making this smaller conference grow over time. And with Python Italia, we pretty much have a similar thing. So we want to make the Italian meetups grow over time. And so we've done some work there and actually quite proud of, you know, the people I have stepped up a lot. And there's quite a few meetups about Python in Italy. And my hope is that this is going to grow and we're also going to have hopefully at some point more money to distribute to the smaller meetups, because that's one of the things that is going to help quite a bit, because finding venues at the beginning, I think it's quite difficult, even just finding sponsor for food, because usually people like say, oh, there's pizza, let's go there. It's a good way to, it's a good excuse to go to a meetup as well. So that's one thing that's been on top of my mind. And I was having some of this good conversation with Arthur for EuroPython, which that's something that EuroPython should do as well at some point. But it's tough because organizing a conference requires a lot of work. I mean, PyCon Italia, I think we are maybe 20, 30 people around the conference, on and off, I guess. EuroPython is maybe 50 or 60. There's a big number of people doing these things, and everyone is doing it for free, pretty much, for the community. And so it's hard to do more tasks. And I'm really grateful of all the people that have been doing, the work for PyCon Italia. It's a lot of work, and you know, if they were not there, we would probably not be able to do this conference. And I don't know, it's a good thing that we're doing for the community. Like, I remember last year, I think we did a show of hands during one of the first keynotes, and we asked how many people were new to the conference, and I think most of it, like half of it at least, were new people, which it's a good sign because the community is like evolving and we're getting, you know, new people to find this word and hopefully make friends as well and maybe find a new job as well. I mean, I made a lot of friends through these conferences and also found jobs with this. So hopefully we can change some lives and make it better.
Yeah, networking is an underrated skill. I definitely recommend it to all the listeners. Get out there, go to conferences. Which reminds me, you mentioned your conferences are promoting the local meetups. Do you know how many meetups there are in Italy right now or in general?
I have a list. I think it's 9 of them. Some of them are not.
Okay.
But it's now 9 of them. It's still, we would love to have at least one for every region, which is 20. But it's difficult. Like there's a bit of divide as well between north and south of Italy. So, stuff. But like, we'll hopefully get it better over time. See.
So is that because Italy is like I don't know enough about Italy, but is like Italy like agricultural, like in the south versus the north, or is that like the reason, or is that some other reason, do you think?
Honestly, I'm not 100% sure. It's definitely some historical, but I actually never delved into that. I kind of always give it for granted, and yeah, I never spend much time.
Well, you know, I live in Iowa, which is really rural, and you know, there's Des Moines, which is our capital, and so that's like where you'd go if you wanted to get like a technical job. Mm-hmm. But most of the other communities, which are all like little towns with 1,000 people or less in them, you know, you're going to be working at a gas station or farming. And so you're not going to have very many meetups. You got to meet up in Des Moines and maybe a meetup in another big city. And that's it for Iowa, you know? So I was just curious if that's how Italy is. Or
yeah. I think it's always been like that historically. I mean, also like Italy was divided, you know, quite a bit in the past. So maybe that's it. But I...
Interesting.
History has never been one of my skills, yeah, unfortunately. But I guess to piggyback on, you know, the suggestion of going to conferences, like if you're an introvert, go often to conferences. Like try more times. I mean, it took me 2 or 3 years to actually start making friends, because you see them again, and they're gonna recognize it. They're gonna come and talk to you. Like for me, like personally, it's been quite difficult to make friends, but like. You know, also like assume best intentions. Everyone is there to make friends, and usually people are friendly.
Yeah,
so they try multiple times.
They have similar interests to you. I mean, that's the whole reason you went, and that's what I like about the conferences. You know, you go out. Let's say you go to I don't know, you go to the bar, or you go to a picnic or something. You're not going to meet a bunch of Python people there. And so they're not going to want to talk to you about Python or about engineering or web development, which makes it hard if you're introverted, because that's what you know.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you know anime, or sometimes you know some other introverted topic. But you go to PyCon or another conference like that, a tech conference, you have a lot to talk about, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it's also like the Python world is also quite big nowadays. Sometimes it's also difficult to find people that like the things you like. Like, for example, like if you go to PyCon US, there's going to be quite a few people that do mostly data. So if you want to talk about web, you have to go and find them. But they are there. It just takes a bit of time to meet them and to become friends as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's why they have the self-organizing rooms at least PyCon US. And I assume EuroPython does it too, where you can sign up for a room for an hour and say, hey, come meet up with us. And open space. That's the word. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. EuroPython does it. PyCon US does it. We might be doing next year PyCon Italia, just like the hotel we are in. It's quite small for this kind of thing. Yeah.
I think that's a really nice and unique thing that the PyCon community does, because it really lets people get together here on really niche topics.
Yeah, and it's also sometimes not related to the conference. I mean, PyCon yesterday was a board games people. There were people talking about mechanical keyboards. And I did it's called the Open Space, but it's a running event. Yep. So we went for a run with some of the people at the conference, which was quite fun.
Yeah, they have a lot of interesting ones, a lot of really random ones too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's, I mean, I think it's cool to also like, you know, yeah, Python is kind of the glue that brings us together, but also like it would be cool to find other things in common, because, I mean, there's not just Python. Yeah. It would be cool to do other stuff as well.
Yeah. So it looks like I've got one more question for you. I like to round out the interview with just asking you about any non-technical hobbies that you like to do.
Yeah, I feel like most of my hobbies are technical, unfortunately. I mean,
that's fine.
Yeah. But
you said running. You like to go running, yeah, right?
Yes, exactly. That's the kind of main one. I mean, running, traveling, and hiking are kind of the main things. But the things I've been trying to do the most this year, especially, is running. I've been trying to run quite often, but like I have a pain in my ankle now, so I cannot run that much. Both for next week.
Are there lots of good trails in that area to do that in? Are you just around the neighborhood?
Yeah, so I mean, I live in the center of Slovakia at the moment. So there's a bit of running inside the city, but then after 7 kilometers, it starts. There's a kind of almost like a forest. It's very nice. It's near the river. That's been very nice, but it takes a bit of time to do 7 kilometers. I've been enjoying that. And also like we with a friend last year, we tried to do a marathon in Switzerland. So we have never done a marathon, but we decided to do this one, this particular one in Switzerland, which is fine until 26 kilometers, which is almost up, more than half of it. So it's almost flat for 26 kilometers, and then it goes very steep. I mean, the elevation, the total elevation difference is almost 2 kilometers. So I don't know, 2 kilometers is 1.2 miles. Of elevation difference. And I'd done the 26 kilometer fine, but then when it started going up, I just had to walk. And I, we both didn't manage to finish on time on one of the checkpoints, so we had to quit. But we're trying this year again. And it's cool because this person, Arthur, I met through EuroPython and just talking about running. And we did this together, which is quite fun. And we also kind of started a running club called PyRun. Maybe you can put the link in the show notes. It's now it's a Discord server and a Strava group. We're trying to basically organize runs at a Python conference that we go. So we did one for Salt Lake City, so PyCon US, the one for EuroPython last year, one for PyCon Italia last year, and then this year I've done PyCon Slovakia. And so we do stickers for these kind of things, which is quite fun. It's just an excuse to run and to bring running to more people, hopefully.
That's cool.
And my goal is to make a bigger community and also make it easier for people to maybe, you know, print stickers and kind of start doing runs at all the PyCons because I cannot go to all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nice. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think that brings us to the end of the show. So I want to thank you again for joining me on the Python show, and I hope to talk to you again sometime soon.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
Your favorite podcast is here. Mike Driscoll, The Python Show.